Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Actually, the book that I'm reviewing now, we're going to review now, is one that I finished quite a while ago, but I've only just got around to recording a podcast about it because Juliana just finished it this evening, or
again,
this afternoon.
I'm late. I'm sorry.
A little bit late. But don't worry about it. I've looked back through some of my notes that I made in the ebook and in the Apple Notes on my phone when I was listening to the audiobook, and we can get straight into this. Okay. So this book, The Raven Stratagem by Yoon-Ha Lee, is the follow-up book, the second book in the series. I now discover a trilogy which is called The Machineries of Empire, isn't it?
That's it.
Series name. First book, which was Nine Fox Gambit, was recommended to me last year and became pretty much my favourite book of last year. I gave it 5 stars. We read it again. I listened to it as an audiobook again this year and we talked about it. So I do suggest checking out that book. It's a really good book. We both enjoyed it.
Yes.
We talked to Juliana through it and she, once we talked through it a bit more, you got more out of it and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, certainly.
So if you kind of want a book which reprograms your brain and does all this clever stuff with the writing and tells a really fun story about a world that you've never read that kind of thing before, with weapons that are weird and military stuff which is weird and formations and spaceships and space
interesting
battles.
Interesting characters.
Also, slight spoilers. It's going to be difficult talking about this book without spoiling the end of the previous book in this. There's people who exist only in each other's heads. There's personalities previously taken out of vaults from hundreds of years before. Generals living inside. It's really good. It's a really good book, the first book.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Go and read it.
It was nominated for the Hugo Awards and Nebula Awards, all that kind of stuff.
Did it get an award?
I don't know what awards it did win. I would certainly have awarded it something. It was awarded 5 stars, and as you can tell by looking back at the coming up to 10-year history of this podcast, there's only maybe 10 books that have ever got 5 stars in 10 years. So this is one of those books which really affected me. The previous book. I'm talking about Nine Fox Gambit, the first book. What was I going to say? Yeah, so that's that book. So it's going to be difficult talking about this book without spoilers. I just want to say, though, if you're going to stop listening now because you don't want spoilers of the first book and you've not read that one, this book for me fell quite a long way short of the mark. And it wasn't just that. I was... wanted it to be as good as the first book because I just, you know, it's really difficult to expect a second book in a series to be better than the first book. Sometimes it happens. For example, we read Blind Sight by Peter Watts. I actually enjoyed the follow-up book in that series more.
I haven't read that yet.
You've got it on your shelf.
Maybe, yes.
When you finish reading it, we should never start reading books at the same time. We should always finish reading books at the same time.
Sure.
So when you're in the last few chapters, I will then start and then catch up with you. I think that's the way it should work. Anyway, so Echopraxia, I rated it more highly than the first book in that series. But it doesn't happen very often, and I never expect it to happen in that way. I never expect to think the second book is going to be as good as the first book in the series. Because, you know, you're just not... It's not new in the world, you know.
Sure.
Sometimes a second movie will be better, you know, that kind of thing. But you just don't expect it. Like, nobody goes into Guardians of the Galaxy 2 thinking, this is going to be a better movie than the first one. I think it was nowhere near as good as a movie as the first one. It was a funnier movie in places, but you don't expect it to be as good.
Sure.
Even by that standard of not expecting this book to be as good as the first one, it still fell short of that, which is a real pity.
It is very much a pity. Let's just start with saying what the book is called. Because
The Raven Stratagem.
Yeah, you haven't said it yet.
Literally, this entire time. Well, people have seen the title of the podcast and stuff like that. Raven Stratagem. Spoiler, 2.5 stars from me. And that's a big drop down from 5 stars from the first book in this series. You know, it's not as bad as Hyperion getting, like, what we're giving it, like 4 stars, 5 stars, whatever.
Yeah.
And the fall of Hyperion being so bad that I didn't want to read it and to stop myself reading it. I just went to the Wikipedia page to find out what happens through to the end, to stop myself even reading forward through the book, just to know what happens later, just out of curiosity of how does it end. And I read how it ends and I was like, well, I'm really glad that I didn't put any more time into that. You know, it's not a bit as big fall from grace as Fall of Hyperion was from Hyperion. But you really struggled with it to the point that you were thinking of giving up. And I was telling you, just give up with this book. It's not going to be worth going through to the end.
That's one story by itself. And if we come in telling the stories that we are having about this book.
Yeah, well, let's tell some stories about our experience of reading this book.
Sure.
I mean, we don't need to get into... I mean, is it a spoilers kind of thing? Or
it's not at all.
Okay, well, tell the story about you reading this book. But talk towards the microphone.
Yes, sorry. I started reading this book like 27th of June.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then I'd read it a bit. It wasn't that smooth. I would say it was a bit of a, okay. And then we went on holiday together. And that was literally the only book I had on my iPad because I thought, I enjoyed the first one. And sure, I mean, sometimes I struggle a bit at the beginning of books. But then I thought, that this would just pick up. And then I read it, and even being on holiday, when I have the time and enjoying just having my mind open for stuff like that, it just didn't catch it. I just couldn't. I mean, I was there and complaining about it to Luke, how it didn't move on and do something.
It just wasn't grabbing you.
It wasn't. It just wasn't there because it was mostly.
But did the first book grab you?
Conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed, the two characters in one head thing. There was
fun battle stuff going on.
Very impressive. There was things happening. And in this book, it felt like it was standing still most of the time. And you were kind of hopping from places to places, but still everything happened in one moment. So it wasn't there were things, big things happening, story and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wanted to stop reading it. But then because it was the only book I had, I continued.
And then when you're three quarters of the way through a book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and when it's you just have 120 pages left. You can't just drop a book when it's it's not that bad. It's mostly just reading conversations.
No.
And then I just stuck with it and finished it just today.
Well,
so,
actually, you say it's mostly reading conversations. However, the language in those conversations and the writing in those conversations is actually really good fun. The things that people say is fun and interesting and funny, but it's really difficult. I just remembered another book where the follow-up book falls a long way short, and that is... when an author has a good series early on, or a good few books early on, which become really popular, and then 15 years later, they're like, well, I've run out of ideas. What I should do is revisit the previous world. Now, this has happened a few times, for example, with Ender's Game, and then he just speak for the dead, and he did another few, and the story finished after book 4. And then he was like, what should we do now? Oh, let's just go back and write Ender's Shadow and Shadow of this and all this Shadow series. And it's just cashing in on a previous book. Now, this also, and that's not a, it's a good example because Ender's Game is held up as a great one. Ender's Shadow, and people go, I was just chatting with people online and they were saying, oh yeah, I read Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow and you say I should stop reading after the second book. And I was like, no, Speaker for the Dead is the second book in that. You know, it's like a different series.
Yes.
And it just feels like cashing in. Now, this happened with Verna Vinge, with A Fire Upon the Deep. You read that one, didn't you?
I read that one.
And you go, okay, there's another book which is a follow-up to that book called Children of the Sky. No, Children of the Mind. No, Deepness of Children of the Deep. Anyway, there's a follow-up book to that.
Yeah, okay.
And what happens in that first book is that you follow these really funny aliens with lots of different minds and, you follow their stories. And it's about this wider world which is concentrated here. And there's all these different elements and there's politics and you're following along with the dog aliens. And it's really fun. And then in the second book, he's like, okay, now this book is going to be set on the same place with all the same characters, but... all the interesting thing from that first book, which is about the zones of thought and this big galaxy-spanning politics and all these spaceships that are happening, but not in this zone, but elsewhere, this side story, which is the backstory. That's none of them, because now they're isolated in this world.
Yeah.
And all of the dogs, we're not actually going to... And none of the dogs, aliens, mixture aliens, none of them are going to be the main characters. So we're just going to spend time with the children in the book, human children, and they're just surrounded by the interesting... and all the interesting stuff that was in this book. It was just like, we're going to do another story set in the same place with the same characters, but the viewpoint character is going to change, so we're going to be... we're not like the unique alien, the unique thing which your brain was having to get around when one of the dogs gets a new member and it's no longer called Rackasmackapath. It's called Smacky Packy Pothy Poop or whatever. Like, you remember that when he gets a new dog member.
I remember that.
And I was just like, why write a book in this world world when you don't have, like, when we're not following the story of a pack of dogs where the members can die and new members can come along and their, you know, their and their personalities change. And it's just an incredible science fiction invention or science fiction alien, and you can read about something which you've never read before. You get story ideas, the story things that can come out of that, which you've never read before. And they're like, let's follow up with that book in the same world, but all of that interesting stuff that you loved about the first, we're just not going to do that. This book reminds me of that.
Yeah.
Raven Stratagem, again, not really spoilers, but the setup in the first book is that somebody, they take a general out of cold storage, but only the mind, and they're like, okay, this general is a super important person, and he's very
crazy.
Clever. A bit crazy, maybe. But he's, yeah, no, he's called the Butcher of whatever, but he's never lost a battle, and we need him now because we need to not lose this battle. The only way we can house his personality and memories is to put him inside somebody else's brain. And you're like, great. So the entire story is told from the point of view of somebody who has somebody else in their brain and who is now in control of a fleet of starships in a battle, and there's a siege and all that kind of stuff, and all the tactics that come from that. But it's a unique storytelling perspective. And in this book, in Raven Stratagem, they go, this character's here, but guess what? We're not going to see inside their head. We're just going to be in other people's heads, normal humans. And I'm like, but that was what the first book was about. That's what they loved about the first book. One of the many things that I loved about the first book was that. And then they're just like, okay, next up book. Or Yoon Ha Lee is just like, next up, we'll do the same kind of thing. But the one of the central interesting things of the first book, we're just going to discard. And now we're just going to tell a book with a human protagonist with just a normal brain and a normal cortex.
I couldn't point out who is actually the protagonist in this one. There are like several of them, and it's not like there weren't conversations and stuff in the first book. We had lots of conversations, especially between the two characters in one head. This is annoying. I talk there, I talk to you.
Yeah, we've got to talk towards the microphone. This is just the way we're doing it.
Sure. Anyway, but having their conversation, but there were things happening. There was something around them happening. In this book, it felt like, yeah, sure, there were things happening towards the end, I would say.
Yeah,
never anything. I mean, it is in the title, of course. I could have gotten it right from the beginning. I'm just not a lover of strategy games. Not at all. And this is part of this whole universe, galaxy, whatever, is playing games, as we could understand from the first one.
Yeah.
But this one is obviously not the fun game. This is the boring strategy games that I just don't enjoy. You know, I'm just...
You don't
not,
like... You're not interested in the politics. You're not interested in the backstabbing.
I'm not interested in the politics. I'm not interested in conspiracy. You know, no, the other one that... You know, that happens on courts where people... treachery, you know.
Yeah.
They make complots.
Double crossing and all that.
It's just nothing I'm interested in, which is why I'm also not interested in Games of Thrones.
Yeah, because it's literally a game of who sits in the throne.
Exactly.
And there's lots of politics and other manoeuvring and stuff. And if you're not interested in politics and manoeuvring, you're not going to enjoy Game of Thrones. But again, it still does have dragons and battles and stuff to help you. But this book didn't even... So, another thing, again, in fact, it's not even really a spoiler. So, in the first book, it's set up that these different calendars, the calendrical way of doing it. It's very confusing, but it's a great science fictional setup that as long as people keep using this calendar and observe time, the passage of time, in these different ways, and there's different observances that go along with it, technology works. But, unfortunately, to make the technology work and to keep doing this, the calendars and the remembrances and the different things get more and more bloody, and any kind of revolt is put down by mass genocide and wiping out of planets and wiping out of whole populations and stuff like that. So... one of the things that Jadao, who's the main character in the first book, and Karis are doing is like, oh, what we need to do is we need to reprogram the calendar, and Karis, who is a mathematician, so she can do all of that. You know, she has the ability to rejigger all the calendar, do all the calculations that are necessary to do that. And Jadao is someone who's going to be, if he gets a fleet, he's going to have the power to put that new one in place. And the first book ends with them going, I'm trying to be as vague as possible, but it's sort of like, and then they sailed away into the sunset, again, really vague about this, sail away into the sunset, and in the future, all they need to do is, if they get an army, they will be able to rejigger the calendar and to make it humane for everyone and upset the power. You know, that's the kind of thing, that was the goal that they had at the end of that first book. And like, this book starts, and I was just like, but I didn't actually, when that first story finished, I was just like, oh, and in the future, because Jadao is an unbeatable military leader and strategist and all that other kind of stuff, and Karras is a world-beating or universe-beating mathematician who is all this kind of thing, of course they're going to be able to do this book. Of course they're going to be able to rejigger the calendar. Of course they're going to be able to win. Nobody can stand against them. And I was hoping that this book would be about the antagonist, the person who is going to try and stop them. But I thought that's going to be impossible because these two people are supermen. Now, these two characters working together like this, they're just like, what can stand in their way? They're just going to be able to do this easily. And then I read Raven's Stratagem, and it was just like, oh yeah, and they did it.
You spoiled the
whole
thing.
No, I'm not spoiling, because that's what it is. It's sort of like, what we're going to do is rejigger this. This was the plan at the end of the first book, and this book is just like, oh, and that's what they're going to do. And again, there's interesting stuff that happens along the way, but what it is about two people having a plan at the end of the last book, and then at the end of this book, they're just like, and we did it. And I was like, how was that difficult? There was nothing that stood in their way which was difficult. There was lots of conversations, there was lots of, oh, and there's a battle here, and they're chasing an army over there, and they're scheming over here, but there was never a moment in this book where I thought, oh, I wonder how they're going to do this. Oh, I wonder what might go wrong. Oh, you know, what's going to stand in the way? I was just reading it all the time and thinking, this is too easy. There's nobody who can stand up against these people. And I was really hoping when that first book ended that if there was going to be something in that there's going to be, like, we're going to follow someone who is going to be good enough and big enough and strong enough, or there's going to be a big problem. I thought the Halfmen who were going to come in were going to do something which was going to be so bad that they're like, oh, shit, actually, we thought that's the most important thing, but now there's this other threat, and we needed to, you know, it's sort of like Star Wars ends, and they blow up the Death Star, and you're like, oh, well, that was pretty good, and you're like, oh, shit, Darth Vader's not the main bad guy, it's this Emperor over here, and I thought there would be some complexity in that way, but here it's sort of like, oh, right, so they're going to do this thing, and they start doing the thing, and then they're like, oh, and then we kind of did the thing, and then I was just like, oh.
And yeah, also, you know, the Halfmen, as interesting as I think they are in this universe, we always observe them from the outside.
Yeah.
We're always like, oh, and then they are moving their fleet this way, and then doing this.
But we just get reports of that.
It feels, you know, it feels like you have a hall where military generals are standing in front of a huge map and pushing around chips and like saying like, oh, and then we do this, and then they do this, and then we do this, and then we do that.
Yeah.
And it's just so frustrating.
Yeah. So I think we don't even need to go into that many more details about what happens in the book or anything.
Well,
it's just that, like, look, we'll go through our notes in a second. We'll go through the notes in a second. I just want to say that the most disappointing thing about this is that I actually enjoy the politics and I enjoy the stratagems and I enjoy all of that, but it can't just be more of that. In the first book, we were learning about the world, we were learning about the different battle systems, we were learning about the different weapons, we were learning like how the politics works and about the different factions, and everything that we needed to know in this book was just, it was just, I'd learned it all in the first book, and here was just like, and now some fun conversations and fun battles and some fun maneuvering and that kind of stuff. But nothing new, nothing mind-breaking, nothing mind-bending like in the first book, nothing exciting for my brain to get around. So it was just so plain. It was like, these people are going to do these things with this rule set that we learned in the first book, and now here's another book of them doing the same thing. Doing what they were doing before. Well, not even doing what they're doing before.
Yeah.
But from a different perspective of someone who is like, ah, well, we had Karras in the first book. Well, let's have someone who is just like Karras, but not quite like Karras, but enough like Karras that we're not going to be too turned off, you know.
Are you thinking about Brosnan or what?
No. What was the...
Kiryev.
Kiryev.
It's sort of like... No, but the point is, like, I would say, like, a third of the book is her thing.
Yeah.
Another third of the book is Brosnan, and another third is Mikodes. So there is just no fucking main character. There's no way you can't say, okay, this is the story about Yeah. And we're following that person.
But the thing is, I liked their manoeuvring. I liked that Brosnan went off and was kicked out and did so. And I was like, oh, he's a guy who is outside the rule set. But then by the end...
it was obvious that because he was outside the rule set, then he would be fine with going with their way.
Yeah, but... I know.
It was so obvious.
I know it was obvious, but what I'm trying to say is that, like, who I thought were going to be the main, and, like, all of the people, I was like, oh, I hope Judao and Kerris have a main protagonist here. I hope, an antagonist. I hope they have someone who they can fight against who is going to challenge them at the level or above the level they are. You know
how that book felt a bit? It felt a bit like that was all the little bits and pieces that didn't fit in the first book.
Yes, exactly.
And then he stripped this all out of the first book and then thought, but this is still cool and fun conversations and stuff. So I just put this in a second book. Not the fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at the beginning, at the end of the last book, how they were so clever with... who is helping them succeeding in their mission.
You mean in the previous book?
In the previous book.
Yeah,
at the end of the previous book.
Yeah.
I love the thing about the servitors. I'm always happy to have and suddenly the entity that everyone is ignoring is getting the helping hand and solving and helping save the day.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoyed that at the end.
Yeah.
You know what happens?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, at the end of this book, no.
Just like it feels like if you have a timeline, a bit timeline fixated, but you have the book and the end of the first book, you have a little bit of that, then you have the next book, long, long nothing, and then towards the end, eighth of the book, suddenly you have a fun servitor characters coming up again.
Yeah, what I want to say about this book, it feels like, you know what I said, like at the end of the book, they're like, oh, we're going to go off and do this thing. And then this whole book is them just doing that thing. It really feels like it should have been like, whatever the third book in this series is, which will come out, next year or whenever it is, whenever the next book comes out. Like, what it should be is that, what it felt like this book should be is the first three or four chapters, but told from, that removed Mikudez in this book, who's, one of the politicians left back home. It would have been really fun if the first few chapters of the next book would have been the Mikudez chapters in this book of him going, oh, right, oh shit, Judao and Kerris are still over there. Oh shit, they've taken control of a fleet and blah, blah, blah. And then it gone, boom, all of this stuff all compressed down because I don't need to see people just succeeding all the time.
Yeah.
It's not interesting when I already knew that they could succeed and was looking forward to how this would be hard for them to succeed, but I have a whole book of people finding something easy.
Yeah.
And that's not interesting. So if it was just the first few chapters of the next book, or sort of what they wanted to do in book one, they did. And then, what will be book three is the first few chapters are going, hey, guess what? What they planned at the end of first book, they pulled it off. And now what's the fallout from that? And how is it going to move on in the future?
How are they going to put it back in place? Something back in place.
Somebody having a plan at the end of book one, them succeeding at that plan should be the start of book two, not all of it. It felt like it was, or it should be the last few chapters of book one. Like you're saying, what was left over.
Yeah.
They could have gone, we could have just never had an extra few chapters.
It would have been a great thing if he then would have continued, but with a viewpoint of, for example, the servitors and how they communicate amongst each other, viewing the humans or everyone doing this.
Book
this would have been great.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This book rewritten purely from either the servitors' point of view, great, or rewritten purely from Brosnan. Yeah, all of it rewritten just from his point of view and him having more to do. Because, again, an interesting character, and it would have been more interesting to spend more time
with Brosnan.
Okay. Or it all from Mikudez and Istrides, his brother. If it was all back there, or if it was all from that point of view and Judao and Kerris were doing stuff out in the further world, and we were just... But, of course, now what we're doing is just rewriting the book
for what we want it to be. But the problem is here that I looked, I went to Goodreads and gave points and stuff, and then I thought, oh my goodness, I'm totally the off person here.
You're the
Everyone
minority.
Loved it and gave it 4 and 5 stars, and I just
yeah, look at
maybe
this.
They're just putting it into the general maybe in their heads they were putting it together with book one and combining it into one book.
Well,
maybe that's you can give it 4 and 5 stars.
What happens with books in series, they continuously get good, or sometimes even if the series declines in quality, the rating goes up, because what happens is the people who read book 7 in a series are people who've read 6 previous books by this author.
Yeah.
And it means that everybody who doesn't like the series anymore has stopped reading it. So that means it inflates the rating as they go through.
Yeah.
So everybody who hated the first book, none of the people who didn't like the first book are going to read the second book in the series. So it's like a selection bias of people who like the author.
I do like the first book. And
yes.
I think the author did a brilliant job there. But then, I mean, how can this not be obvious that there is just a dip down in...
The writing is fine.
Yeah.
The world building is fine. Even the characters that we follow in different times, like I say, they're interesting characters and they say fun things and they do interesting things. The fundamental problem with this is that there isn't a story. There is not a major conflict in the story. There isn't this person wants this thing and this person, or, you know, this faction wants this thing and this faction wants another thing, and they are equals, and it's going to be difficult for one person to gain it.
Weirdly enough, I think it is like the thing of like he's trying to hide it, but on the other hand, he's putting so much emphasis on what he is kind of like avoiding to say, you know, it's like, I'm not saying this, you know that, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying this.
Yeah, it's bad foreshadowing of something. And then,
it doesn't feel like it's a reveal at the end.
You know, because both of us picked up straight away. So I'm like, oh, there's a big reveal. And I'm like, but they were talking about geese all the time. I know what's going on. I've just read, because I read the first book, just like we both read the first book almost a few weeks before starting this book, you know.
Yes.
So it was very fresh in my brain. I'd just read it last year, listened to an audiobook this year, and then going into the next book, it was really fresh in my mind of what was happening, and so it didn't feel like a different story. And I'm like, are we meant to have forgotten about the geese? Like, is that meant to be something? But I was like, I can't forget that, because that's like a defining character. Anyway. Again, I'm being a bit vague about it, but it's like the revelations don't work.
No.
There isn't any twist. The story just goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G. They planned from getting from A to G, and then this book just says A, B, C, D, F, G, and you're just like, what was it? What, it should be A, B, C, oh shit, M, J, Q, L, Z, 1, exclamation point.
And we always wanted to end in T.
Yeah, and then, back through T, and if you did get to G at the end, that should be another book's time and with a lot more difficult stuff. But it was just like, hey, we plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then you have a whole novel, which is just A, B, C, D, E, F, G, with a few diversions around. But not diversions of difficulty, not diversions of plot, just other things happening other places.
Yeah.
And the interesting mind stuff...
Jumping between main characters.
Yeah, and the interesting mind stuff wasn't in this, except at a distance, but not really there.
Yeah,
the interesting world building, there was no extra world building because we all found out what we needed to do. All the extra politics, it's sort of like, it was just playing out the politics of stuff before with a few of the revelations of who was working with who, which was interesting. And it's then more backstory for these characters. Like, I don't need more backstory for those characters because... They're only now important characters because you're just writing them more in this book.
The thing is with backstory, backstory is always good if you have a story going on and you want to interrupt, you know, like building tension. You want to interrupt the lots and lots of stuff going on, and then you cut in and go like, oh, and let's just see the backstory, and then cut back to the really cool story.
Yeah.
This is how you keep it like...
Yeah, it builds tension and reflects more light on what's happening now.
Yeah, but this didn't happen here.
Because there was no tension to break from, to build more of. There was nothing happening which breaking from it builds more tension, and there wasn't really any extra light to shed. Okay, so there's our things. I'm going to give this book... let's go through the notes. You're just looking at your notes.
I was just wondering, do you have any thoughts about this obsession with this formation instinct? Do you have like a thought that it like means something? I was thinking like it kind of questions like some weird sort of slavery, but then you're doing the slavery willingly. Is this the formation instinct supposed to be like money? Like,
I don't know. The formation instinct being when you sign up for the Kel military, the military faction. There's 7 factions, 6 factions, maybe 5, maybe not any. I don't know. So the formation instinct is when you're given an order, you have to do the order.
But only. downwards.
Yeah,
it only works downwards.
Yeah, of course. When someone above you gives you an order, you're just compelled to carry it out. And that is like a magical byproduct of the calendar systems. But it gives them, it makes them much more formidable in battle, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Another thing. In the first book, Formation Instinct was a fun element in the book of many
other
wider things. In this book, it becomes like one of the main focuses of the book. And I like that because Brezan has got interesting stuff going on, but it's never really tested in a way that
all of the Kel, and the thing is, there is Formation Instinct, but it can be broken, and then you're a Crush Hawk. So how many of those exist? A lot of them. So what's the point then, if there are lots of people out there who are Kel, but then like have issues with the Formation Instinct, and then it can be broken, and then they just don't do what supposed to do, and they get killed or do whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine, but like again, it's not enough to build a whole novel around.
No, I don't think so. And especially, it feels like there is. It felt to me the way that there was this heavy, a magnifying glass on this. It felt like there was a moral behind it, or like he wanted to say this was like a thing he's putting in place to criticize our society.
But there wasn't enough with it.
No, but then I was like trying to figure out, okay, is he talking about capitalism? Is Formation Instinct money?
No, I just think it's a fun science fictional fantasy element.
Yeah, but it just got so much prominence. So
I'm just saying, it would be fine if there was more to do with it, but this book is lacking an interesting plot.
Yeah.
It's lacking an interesting storyline.
The thing is, I'm guessing that it is like, because this is like the second book in the series, so you have story and plot in the beginning, and you probably will have some in the third book. But then,
but what could there be?
Like,
what could happen?
I don't know. I mean, there could, but I don't know.
But that's the thing. At the end of the first book, I was just like, oh well, the next part of the story is that they either succeed what they're going to do, they're going to succeed, or it's going to be really, really difficult for them to succeed, and that's what the next book is. But we didn't get either of that.
We got like mingle.
Yeah, we're just blurring along. Yeah. Anyway, my note, let's have a look at what the first thing that I made a note of. Oh, actually, I started listening to this as an audiobook, and then you bought it as an ebook from the from Apple, what was it, iBook store. And because we have the family sharing, then I had it, so I actually went over to both reading it as an ebook and listening to it as an audiobook. So
was it a different experience?
Well, the thing is, I'd both listened to the first book as an audiobook and read it as an ebook.
Yeah.
So here, I kind of got that experience of both listening to it. So it's difficult for me to say, but what's that one? I like the thing, slamming into unconsciousness. I made a note of that because I just love some of the turns of phrase. Like some of the little bits of writing is really good fun. This one, the Shuos, known for information services or backstabbing, depending on your point of view. And I like that. I like that different setups of these different factions, and it goes through what they're known for. And the Shuos, information services or backstabbing. So let's have a look at this other one. I like this one as well. Kuriev, she had only fucked up by getting herself promoted too high. And I love
that kind
of thing where like, oh shit, I shouldn't, I'm the only one who's qualified, I'm the top of the tree, but everyone, I'm only here because I was promoted to this point and then everyone above me died. Oh shit, now I'm in charge. You know, that whole idea of being promoted too high, I quite enjoyed.
Yes.
What's another note? You do another note. And
I have one about one of the other factions, which is like, that mentions the Andan, which is like, this is about the Andans, right?
Yeah.
Fucking peculiar for spacefarers, not to mention their descriptions of milking machines are bizarre. Who writes poetry about milking machines?
Yeah.
I just find this like little insight
into the different factions.
It's funny.
And again, the book is, there's fun, like you say, oh, it's just people having conversations, but the conversations are fun. For example, here's Mikodes. Someone says to him, is this how the whole Citadel of Eyes... No, is the whole Citadel of Eyes run like this? Hexarch, Mikodes says, be reasonable. I hire staff as little like me as possible, or we'd get nothing done. And I quite like that idea of the people in the book know what they are like. They know their strengths and weaknesses and things. So there is, like I say, there is interesting stuff.
There's more that, of this, right? I love this writing thing. There's this one thing. I posit this. We are too lackadaisical about responding to Jidao's propaganda campaign.
Yeah, and, you had to ask me about lackadaisical.
Yeah, but that's just a fun... I mean, who knows this word, right? I mean, who's using that on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah.
So the writing is super fun.
Mm. However, there's this one section quite near the end, which it takes a sudden turn into... Oh shit, I've got to finish. I only have like, you know, 300 pages or whatever it is to write this novel in, and I've got to wrap up a lot. And so it just says, so there's this line that happens, it's sort of like, you know, Keres, Brezen, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, great line. I hate it when you open your mouth, Brezen said. The things you say never make the situation better. And you turn the page, and suddenly it goes, Kuroev took to playing card games with the servitors on the grounds that no one expected her to function anymore. The servitors usually run. She appreciated that they didn't throw the games to make her feel better. Shuas Mukides finished knitting his scarf. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. So that's it? That's all we get? And it's sort of like 38 days later after Mukides. And I'm just like, and then 79 days later, blah, blah. And I'm just like, wait a second, you can't just suddenly skip forward.
Yeah,
and I was like, didn't he do this with the whole book? Why is it, like, the stuff that they go over in literally one page, you know, 38 days later, 79 days later, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was like, we could have done that for the previous most of the book. We could have had like a 4 or 5 chapters of this at the start. Then this one page saying days later, this many days later, 8 days later, the happen came in, blah, 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 blah. Right. And now here's another 4 chapters, wrap up the series. And I'm like, great. Okay. That's the first 7 chapters of book 2. Now let's get going where the real story
starts. Unfortunately, I made notes of that.
Yeah.
I wrote down Nine Fox Gambit had in my iPad 253 pages. Right?
Yeah.
Lots of action, lots of things happening, all like they had to describe the universe and stuff. So the second book in the series, where we already know about the universe and how it functions.
It's got a lot less work to do.
Exactly. Yeah. But a lot less action, then has 272 pages.
That's more, that's like 20 pages, like 19 pages more for a second book with way less going on.
Yeah.
No world building needed. None of the interesting people in each other's brain stuff. Yeah, I know we've gone on quite a long time. This is pretty much as long as we need to go because I've finished off my notes here.
Yeah,
that's all of my notes that I have about the book. Do you have any other notes?
I wanted to come up with a fun, interesting... I'm just not good with language, you know. I'm just not a word juggler.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Johan Lee is. But I say I'm the black sheep in the herd of white sheep.
You are...
Giving it 2.5 stars.
Well, I was also... Look, you gave it on Goodreads.
I gave it two stars,
but actually it's 2.5 stars. On Goodreads, I gave it 3 stars, but actually it's 2.5 stars. You know, we were both giving it 2.5 stars, and that's
right. I was thinking about not continuing and still did because it was the only book I had. So it was kind of bad. It was almost on the edge of not continuing reading it. So this is why
it's not like more towards two. And it's not like you weren't continuing reading it because like the first book you were like, oh, this is too much for me because it was too difficult to get your head around.
Really dense,
but once you got through
stuff.
It and I helped out and I read through some passages with you and helped out, you're like, oh, it's difficult to read because there's too much going on. Whereas this was difficult to read because there wasn't enough going on.
It was just a strategy.
Yes. It's called a Raven stratagem.
I know, but still.
I know what you mean.
I'm really disappointed.
So we both gave it 2.5 stars. So, the audiobook was fine. Like I say, I mean, I didn't listen to all the way through the audiobook, but it was good. It was like the first audiobook. So go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP and pick out any book that you want. They have like 180,000 different titles there. I would suggest Nine Fox Gambit, one of my favourite books of last year, written by Yoon-Ha Lee, who's the same author that wrote The Raven Stratagem. But, you know, the other book he wrote was just way, 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 way better than this. It was way, way better. It's called Nine Fox Gambit. Check out that one instead.
Let's wait for the third one.
Yeah.
Do you think you want to...
Well, I will read the third book as long as I know it really is the last book in the series. And I've been burnt by this before to the point... Well, it's not burnt by this before, but I realised that if I'd have read... If the third book is amazing again, or even if it's not amazing, if it was just as good as what I expected the second book to be, which is a step down from the first book, but not like, not, you know, not like Children of the Sky, No, Children... Oh, there was another book that I just read, which was called Children of the Sky or Children of the Mind. Anyway, whichever the book by Verna Vinge is, it's not that much of a step down from Fire Upon the Deep. Sure. And it's certainly not a Fall of Hyperion after Hyperion.
Okay.
It's not that, you know...
Well, the language and funny, funny things are saving it.
And I did... There was never a moment in this book where I didn't think I would get to the end, unlike you. You know, yeah. I did get through it, okay. I guess that's why I gave it 3 stars on Goodreads, because, yes. like, there wasn't a moment where I felt like giving up. But, like... If the second book, it's like the sticky middle movie in a trilogy, or the bad middle book in whatever. Like, if you read the second book and then feel slightly disappointed, but then immediately can go into the third book and really enjoy finding out the end of the story and all the action and all the, you know, the yeah. ultimate battles
because
and
the,
all that kind of stuff.
Because the overall trilogy kind yeah. of balances each other.
Well, put
out.
It this way: there's a graph. In the first yeah. book, it starts off neutral and goes up and up and up and up and up.
Yeah.
And if the second book is bad, it can start off really high and go, oh, down, 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 down. But then the third book is bad. It goes down, 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 up, 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 up,
yeah.
up, and it finishes
also
on a high again.
Your expectations yeah. are at this point really low.
Yeah.
And if it then...
goes up again.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you read the first book and it goes up, up, no, middle, middle, up, up, high, 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 stop. And then you read the second one and it goes... high, high, middle, 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 low, but then doesn't immediately go low, high, 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 top again, like that for a good third book in a series. Yeah. If it doesn't have that shape, you can't read it immediately. You're just ending on that low, and that's what I feel like. And it's not even that low of a low. It's
no.
just such... It's just such a drop-off from literally my favourite book of last year.
It feels a bit like, you know, you're in a good... You're on a good roller coaster. I'm not a fan of roller coasters, you know
yeah.
that. But you're on a good, fun ride. You go up and down and... loopings and stuff, and then suddenly it's like, and then
yeah.
it goes,
yeah.
and you're sitting there thinking like, where's all the fun gone?
Yeah, and then it all happens again.
Yeah.
yeah, this book is like, you know, when we went on, what was it, the Ultimate or whatever it went, Lightwater Valley, which was at one point the longest roller coaster in the world, and it doesn't just have one hill to start it off. Halfway through, there's another hill, and it tows
yeah.
you back up to another one, and then
and
you do the second half.
And goes left and right and
yeah.
shakes
I know,
your head.
I know, it's a really fun one. It's one of the fastest, well, not one of the fastest, but it's like, there's a really long, fast section. But there is that middle bit where you're just going, and it's not over. You know you're only halfway through, but you're the,
that book felt a bit like that.
But instead of going to go even higher, just imagine it's going and you're
on the same
level. Yeah, so it's a weird.
But we don't know yet. Maybe it goes up.
40 minutes about a book neither of us are that impressed with. I'm very sorry. Oh, let's actually quickly go over. I haven't looked at other people's reviews. You said other people. Oh, the eclipse is starting right now.
Oh,
you can time this. Oregon. We were going to look at the totality. We'll look at some live streams. It'll be fine. So, oh, what was I going to go? Raven Stratagem. People will be able to time this podcast literally to the second.
Yeah, it's 5 stars.
Lindsay
Reggie,
5 stars. Tudor, 5 stars. Terence Blake, 3 stars. This is what I wanted to say. When I found out at the end of the first book, it's sort of like the first book, and I read the first book, and then I looked on Goodreads, and it said Machineries of Empire, book number one. You know, I even have that in my brain going, oh, I'm not very interested in I'm not very interested in Machineries of Empire.
Jugglers in the Park.
Yeah. I'm not very interested in Machineries or Empire. You know, I'm much more interested in funny space battles with weird time and weird mathematical-based whatever like that. And then I was like, if it just becomes Game of Thrones and it's about, you know, people manoeuvring politics, so interested about that. So even the name that he's picked out, that Yoon Ha-Lee has picked out for, if it was like the Nine Fox Gambit trilogy, I'd be like, great. But it isn't. It's the Machineries of Empire.
Yeah,
I'm like,
but you know, the thing is with this kind of stuff, so many people like this. You can see it in Game of Thrones. How
yeah.
many people are super fans of this?
Terence,
like, I mean, it's just a good wave to surf on.
Yeah, we have now taken more than 40 minutes to say what Terence Blake wraps up in his 3-star review. I eagerly waited the sequel, Raven Strategy, but found it a disappointing, albeit pleasant read. In other words, it was pleasant. You know, it got through. Anyway, contains a competent and enjoyable story set inside Yoon Ha-Lee's Hector. Unfortunately, there is not as much world-building and speculative beauty as the first novel. Yep, so I think people... Zivin rated it 4 stars, Juliana Kunzendorf rated 2 stars, and then a few people have marked it... a lot of people have done it.
Yeah, but overall, like, look at the, yeah. at the figures, like the
yeah, 4.26.
Yeah, 4.26.
It's quite a high average rating.
Yes, and I just don't see it.
I'm glad that we're both in
the same boat. There.
Yeah. Oh, it's not jugglers; it's just a frisbee. Okay. From our apartment, we have a view of the park, and we thought it was a juggler with some rings, but it wasn't. It's just an aerobie frisbee. Right, that's it. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. You can follow Juliana Kunzendorf on Twitter. She's JUKU Berlin.
UKU
Berlin.
Right.
For Juliana Kunzendorf.
I don't even know
Berlin.
Why I got this nickname.
No, it's a good one.
Sounds
well, there was Juliana. Juliana Kunzendorf was too.
Uninspired.
UKU Berlin. I think it's good. You know, because you're wanting someone to be a singer and a singing teacher, but like JK Soprano and all these other things that you had was already taken. Anyway, Instagram, I'm Luke Burridge there. YouTube, I'm Luke Burridge there. You can see if you're interested on the trip. That we were just talking about. Check out the vlog that I made of mine and Juliana's trip around the British Isles. We went to Dublin and Liverpool and Belfast. And Wales and the Scilly Isles for the first time, and Woo. England and Milford Haven. No, that was Wales. Oh, and Guernsey as well. So check out
Channel
that.
Isles.
It's a fun 15-minute vlog of us traveling around, whatever it is. Anyway, so check that out. Luke Burridge on YouTube. What else? LukeBurridge.com is LukeBurridge.com/vlog where you can find everything.
SFBRP.
Oh yeah, SFBRP.
Episode list.
You can see all the books I've read. We are now at episode 340, which is a lot of episodes. And check out the archive feed because iTunes doesn't like podcast feeds which go too long, and the website can't deal with the bandwidth or whatever this memory thing is. And I can only have podcast feeds 100 or so episodes long. But sure. To check out all previous podcasts, check out the archive feed, which you can find at sfbrp.com. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.